Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and welcome. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left Restaurant in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're going to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com. Now you can download our podcast on iTunes. Good morning, Francis.
Hey there, you with a star in your eyes.
Why are you singing at me, man?
I'm singing.
Stop singing at me.
Because the Michelin Guide came out. The French Red Guidebook, Le Guide Michelin, is now in New York. And this has been long awaited.
And did somebody tell you you should sing at me?
I don't know. Stars was the theme.
Because anybody who told you you should sing at me is in big trouble with me right now.
It's a talk radio station. I think Bruce Johnson is going to be coming after me for singing on talk radio. I don't think that's allowed. But the Michelin Guide is the most respected guide in all of Europe, and it is in every city in Europe, and it has never been in the United States before, and it's been much touted.
Starting with New York City.
And they've started in New York City. They've just come out with the Michelin Guide. Now, the way the Michelin Guide works is they have professional reviewers that review places several times. They have a staff that keeps going around. They review all year long.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get your Michelin rating at the end of the year. And what you get is, if you even to get listed, means you're worthy of
notes. It's a really big deal to get listed in Le Guide Michelin.
And then for the very best restaurants in any given city or country, because there's a Michelin Guide to France, there's a Michelin Guide to Paris, there's a Michelin Guide to different regions of different countries. But to get reviewed at all, to get mentioned at all, is a mark of honor.
For years, the Michelin Guide said, no restaurant in the United States is good enough to possibly make our guide. We're not going to bother reviewing the restaurants.
That's bunk. There were always restaurants here that could make it. But were there always restaurants here that could get stars?
Mm-hmm.
Because unlike, you know, people think, well, if it didn't get any stars, it wasn't a good review. Even getting mentioned in the Michelin Guide says you're a good restaurant.
Right. One star is a great place.
Right. If you're in Europe and you see a one-star restaurant, a Michelin one-star restaurant, mm-hmm. which is different than the star ratings for hotels. I mean, there are five-star hotels. It's all kinds of different stars. But the Michelin star, a one-star Michelin restaurant, is not an inexpensive place.
And we should tell you, too, Michelin only goes up to three.
Right.
So there's a mention, which is zero.
Which is an honor.
Which is an honor. There's one, which is a pretty special restaurant.
Right. Michelin one-star restaurants are serious restaurants.
And how that's defined is a one-star restaurant is highly respected by savvy travelers.
Right.
Okay. Then there's a two, which is next, and that is described as worth the detour. And then three, which is their highest rating, and it says it's worth a special trip. And for some people, they mean worth a special trip to Paris from the United States.
Which Mark and I have done, actually. Now, Michelin surveyed 507 New York restaurants in all five boroughs for the New York Guide, which sells for $16.95, which is cheaper than the French Guide. There were 39 restaurants that won stars. That's fewer than half as many as have stars in Paris, which has 10 3-stars among the 580 places listed. And London only has a total of 34 restaurants with stars, and only one, Gordon Ramsay, earns 3 stars. We have a number of 3-star restaurants in New York. Now, this is a big deal for these restaurants.
Yeah, it's huge.
I mean, this is international acclaim. In New York, and probably in the country, the most respected review is the New York Times. And that goes up to 4 stars. And 4 stars from the New York Times makes you one of the best restaurants in New York, which, of course, makes you one of the best restaurants in the country. But if you're outside New York, you're not that guide isn't even available mm-hmm. to you. Mm-hmm. And the Zagat Guide is a very important guide, but that's a reader's choice poll.
Mm-hmm. And it's regionally. And regionally biased in some ways.
Sure, and the standards for the restaurants in Ohio are different than they are from Ohio diners. No shot on Ohio. Are different than the standards of diners in Manhattan, you know? So, and you can have a 29-point hot dog stand.
That was a small shot on Ohio.
Not really.
It was a little one. Tell the truth.
Not on everyone in Ohio. but you can have a casual restaurant that gets 28 points because it's the best of category. Whereas a 3-star Michelin restaurant is super high-end,
has
silver,
to be perfect in
perfect
every way.
Service.
And there are many, many, many criteria.
Criteria.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That go into picking these Michelin 3-star restaurants. And the Michelin Guide is very, very tight-lipped about what each of these criteria are.
And one of the reasons that it became so popular in France and became so respected is that in France, where everything is corruptible and everyone is subject to being bribed.
Okay, you've offended the people from Ohio and the people from France. Let's see, we're 4 minutes into the show. Go get them, France. Is anybody else got them?
In France, though, they say that the Michelin guides are incorruptible, like where you can buy the government, that the Michelin reviewers are incorruptible, and because the French take their food very, very seriously. In New York, we have, and the question is, will this guide have traction in New York? Will we pay it any mind? And early reviews are, at least among foodies, people are really paying a lot of attention.
Everybody's paying attention to it.
The three-star restaurants in New York are Alain Ducasse at the Essex House, mm-hmm. John George, Le Bernardin, and Per Se. And that's it. Okay,
that's all in New York. And those are some very, very serious restaurants.
Extraordinary restaurants.
Okay, just so you know how important these types of things are to these restaurants. They mean a plethora of people trying to get reservations to these places.
People will be calling from Paris to these restaurants tonight to try and get in a month from now.
Hundreds and hundreds, maybe thousands and thousands.
And will book their plane reservations based on whether or not they get a reservation.
Correct.
And this is right in our backyard, everybody. But make your reservations early.
And they're talking, this New York Times article that I'm reading right now, that I'm looking at, of owners crying. Because they got 3 Michelin stars.
Yeah, crying and getting boat catalogs sent to their houses. Well, the thing is, it does mean a lot of success, but it's not just that it means that your restaurant's booked forever and always. It means that you have achieved the respect of your peers at the highest level by the most respected guide. Hey, here's an interesting thing. Here we have a first. Per Se is owned by an American-born chef, mm-hmm. Thomas Keller, first American chef to get 3 stars. Other interesting things of note. Now, Le Bernardin, the chef and co-owner, is Eric Ripert, who's French, and John George and Alain Ducasse are all French. Alain Ducasse has a 3-star restaurant in Paris and a 3-star restaurant in Monaco and now a 3-star restaurant in New York, making him the first chef in the history of the world to have 3 3-star restaurants for
That's
a total.
That's 9 stars, and he didn't get them one at a time.
9 Michelin stars. Plus, he has other lesser-starred properties and hotels mm-hmm. in other parts of the world. He is amazing. And
He's amazing.
Mark and I had one of the best meals of our life.
The best meal of my life. In Paris.
At his place in Paris. 2 stars. We have, what do we have? 2 stars.
Danielle Massa.
Yeah.
Boulay and Danube.
Yeah, Danube is a beautiful Austrian restaurant. These are also great, great restaurants. Now, 4 restaurants got 2 stars. Okay, so you're in the top 8 if you got 2 stars.
Right. So again, I think that people look at stars and they think of New York Times stars or they think of some of the other magazines or newspapers that they read for stars. Michelin stars, 3 is the absolute most you can get, and it is a special restaurant.
And it places you in the top 4 restaurants in New York City.
And it places you in the top 300 or 400 restaurants in the world.
In the world. Oh, even fewer than that.
Fewer than that.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, sure.
Now, 2 stars, Danielle Massa, Boulay, Danube. Okay, these are spectacular restaurants, top 10 restaurants in Manhattan, and they are 2-star restaurants. And just if you were to give a ranking, that's only 8. So 2 of the top 10 restaurants in Manhattan are 1-star restaurants.
When we come back, I want to talk more about what the 1-star restaurants are, because I often find when I travel that, well, not only because of budget, but because they're very interesting, what falls into the 1-star category, because I think you can get somewhat more casual dining and a broader definition, whereas, I think to be 2 or 3 stars, you need to be in a somewhat formal environment, mm-hmm. and making the 1-star restaurant more accessible, and I think a little more interesting, and there are some very curious choices in the New York Guide, so stay tuned, and we'll talk a little bit more about that after the break. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:15. You're back with The Restaurant Guys, Mark Pascal and Francis Schott. We're talking about the big news in the restaurant world. The Michelin Guide for New York has just been published. The Michelin Guide for Europe, for all the major cities in Europe, has always been the final arbiter, the ultimate arbiter of restaurants in that city, in that country, wherever, and the first time they've reviewed restaurants in New York. We have 4 3-star restaurants out of all of New York, 4 2-star restaurants out of all of New York, and about 30 1-star restaurants out of all of New York. And the 1-star restaurants have some very interesting choices, don't you think, Mark?
Oh, I definitely do. There are some that I totally agree with and say, wow, this probably could have been a 2-star. This is a great restaurant. Places that I love. A lot of my favorite restaurants in the city are in this 1-star area.
A controversial choice is Babbo, which is Mario Batali's flagship restaurant.
And one of my favorite restaurants in New York.
And I think it is a one-star restaurant on European standards. I think the food is phenomenal. Frankly, I think the food in a different setting, in a different environment, would be two or three stars even. Mm-hmm. And I think that from what I read here, Mario, who we went to college with, actually, is not thrilled with that. They also gave the restaurant the Spotted Pig, which is a gastropub he was involved in starting.
See, now I don't understand
one star.
And Mario writes about it, or is actually
quoted,
unhappy about this as well. I don't understand how they're in the same classification. And I realize that that these classes are fairly wide because there are so few restaurants in each one, but I don't understand how Spotted Pig
the
and
Spotted
Babbo
Pig,
are the
same
place.
Spotted Pig is a gastropub. It's a pub with really good food. Frankly, Mario was quoted, and I love Mario and I love his food. And again, Babbo is one of my favorite restaurants in the world. But he wonders, and I think rightly so, how you can put Babbo and the Spotted Pig, the much more casual Spotted Pig, in the same class. And I don't think you can, but I think I may think a little differently than Mario. I don't think a Spotted Pig belongs
you
there.
You think Spotted Pig one notch
below? It's a no-star.
You know, I think I might disagree with you in that I think there's a huge difference between the two places, but I think that Babbo could have fallen in that two-star category, maybe just barely.
Well, and Mario talks about that, and it's because maybe he plays loud music and maybe because of his style of service, and it's a style of service that's specific to New York, that New Yorkers really embrace that maybe Europeans don't. And that's a very valid criticism and observation. But I think, though, that while I do embrace that sort of cuisine, and again, it's Babbo is one of my favorite restaurants in the world and has been since it opened. I think, though, that when you look for a two- or three-star experience, I look for a little more elbow room at the table, and I look for a little bit of quieter music and a different feel. But, you know, that's
more of an elegant night out. And remember that Guide Michelin, or the Michelin Guide, has very rigid rules as to what allows a place fall into one category or another. They're published nowhere. Right. Nowhere can you know what exactly you need go from one star to two stars.
Except that, you know, when you talk about a three-star restaurant, you're talking about fresh flowers, and you're talking about a lot of real estate.
You're talking about silverware, and you're talking
right,
about
silver is supposed to stay in the
crystal
seal,
glassware.
But you're also talking about a lot of real estate. You're talking about, I don't want to be sitting very close to my neighbor. If if I'm in a three-star restaurant, I'm thinking that
my conversation is my own.
Exactly. And I'm sitting in a very comfortable chair very far away from my neighbors, you know, And I think that Babbo doesn't have that. And if you haven't been to Babbo, I recommend that you go. It's great. It's funky. They play great music. And the food is phenomenal. And the style of service is very familiar and friendly and downscale. And it's a great one-star restaurant. In fact, it is, when I think of one-star restaurants, I can't think, for me, it's the ultimate one-star restaurant. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a great compliment.
There was another restaurant.
And I'd rather dine there more often than the two or threes.
Mm-hmm. There's another restaurant in here that I want to discuss quickly that fell in the one-star category, and that's Kraft. That's a restaurant with a really great wine list, does have a little bit of real estate, does have some pretty special food. Do you think that they could have fallen into two, or do you think they belong at one?
Interesting. Kraft is an interesting restaurant. When they first opened up, they were their idea of that restaurant was they would put the main ingredients down and you would combine what sauce you wanted with what main course. And
I'm glad they don't do that anymore.
Yeah, they quickly abandoned that. No, I think that Kraft in New York is a one-star restaurant.
How about Nobu?
Nobu, I don't know. The fact of the matter is I don't think that I have enough of an expertise in Asian cuisine to say whether I think it's two or three stars.
You know New York restaurants. You know if you like it or not.
I think it's interesting. Quality of food is really high. I'm happy with it in the one-star area. I really am happy with it in the one-star area.
Are there some restaurants that you think should have gotten stars?
Notable exceptions, Chanterelle, Roger de Gorn is the sommelier maître d' there.
For me, Chanterelle could have been two stars.
Two-star restaurant.
Could have been two stars. Chanterelle,
I love it.
Is revolutionized the cheese course in the United States.
And I dined there within the last,
I was going to say, but more importantly, we're not just talking, because like Guide Michelin doesn't look back on your historic significance at all. But Chanterelle is a great restaurant with lots of real estate, a very important wine list, one of the best sommeliers in the country.
Some of the best service you receive. The food is always perfect.
Terrific. The menus are handwritten.
The dining room is simple and elegant.
In a script that can only be defined as
Chanterelle. Exactly.
Okay, that's their script. When you get a menu, it's handwritten and it's done in script.
But here's what I don't understand. Peter Luger, which is the steakhouse in Brooklyn, which has admittedly very good steaks, but terrible service, mm-hmm. mean waiters. It's dirty. It's in a bad neighborhood. The furniture is worn. What are you talking about? They offer you some whipped cream with your dessert, some schlag. That got a Michelin 1-star and Chanterelle didn't?
It's a shame.
Something's wrong there.
It's a shame.
Although those guys at Peter Luger, you know what I mean? I wouldn't mess with them. If you're listening to me.
Maybe they paid the right bill, if you know what I mean.
You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. Central Jersey, 1450th time is 1125.
You know, Mark and I are always saying that long-term, good environmental policy and good economic policy are one and the same. And that's not just for the government, it's also for small business and homeowners just like you. To help us put our money where our mouth is, we called E2ECTA. E2ECTA uses a team of specialists to find practical ways for your business or home to conserve energy and even to generate green energy that the utility company then has to buy back from you. That generates a different kind of green for your bottom line. We've gone solar at our restaurants. We're now producing cheap, non-polluting electricity, and with the help of E2ECTA, we did it for very little money. The government programs available to get you set up are unbelievable. We're talking about grants here, not loans, but grants. E2ECTA will help you find the right programs for you, and they'll do the paperwork. You keep the profits. It's a no-brainer, people. For lower energy usage, more profits for yourself, call E2ECTA at 908-359-9300 or click on their link at restaurantguysradio.com. E2ECTA for total energy solutions.
You're back with The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis, and we're talking about the Michelin Guide, which is the Michelin Red Book, is the preeminent restaurant review book in the world, and there hasn't been one in the United States before. They've come to America, and they're starting with New York.
And some real surprises, I think, and some surprise with who was included, and some surprise with who was left off. And Francis and I were just talking a moment ago about a restaurant called Chanterelle, which was left out of this guide.
Crazy.
And we believe could be
crazy.
Could be a 2-star restaurant. Is very close, in my opinion, to Boulay and Danielle, and right in that same league.
I can't understand how a restaurant like that was left off, and Peter Luger, which is, you know, I mean, it's a great place to go for a downscale steak and pretend like you're a mafioso, you know, but it should not have a Michelin
star.
Doesn't
belong.
You know, another interesting, I'm buying the guide, you know, you have to have it.
Yes.
But another interesting inclusion was a restaurant called Etats-Unis, mm-hmm. United States in French, which is this little restaurant in on the Upper East Side that is near the office of a wine importer where we do business a lot. And I go in there for a casual meal all the time. It was started by a father and son, open kitchen, a little nothing of a restaurant, a little spit mm-hmm. of a restaurant. Very elegant, very good food. I recommend it highly. It's going to be, you know what I hate about this? It's going to be hard for me to get into Etats-Unis.
Very popular now.
Etats-Unis, which is always popular in the neighborhood,
yep.
But I can't imagine now. It was specific to the neighborhood and those in the know, and you could pop in and get a reservation last minute at Etats-Unis almost any night. You might not get exactly the time you wanted. Mm-hmm. And now, with Etats-Unis having a star, I'm not going to be able to get near the place.
It's a big deal. Francis and I have been talking about this for the whole show. It's a big deal.
Yeah. Can we, you know, when they come to Jersey, when we want to get ourselves a star or two.
Yeah, hey, that'd be great. I would be very, very proud of a Michelin star.
Yeah, me too. Well, you have another surprising star for me was Cafe Grey. Grey Coons got mm-hmm. a star. Nobu got a star. Nobu Matsuhisa, right. Which has a beautiful restaurant downtown. And WD50, Willie Dufresne's, got a star.
Yeah.
His very interesting restaurant downtown.
It is interesting, but I can't stand the food.
Yeah.
Sorry.
He's really... Wiley Dufresne is actually his name. Wiley's actually on the cutting edge of cuisine, and he really does push the envelope. And,
yeah.
And Mark doesn't like an envelope push that much.
Got to jump off the edge. Sorry.
Well, we recommend it highly.
I don't want seaweed mixed with my steak and cinnamon cloves. Too much. Too much. Too much. Get
out of here. Well, whatever you feel like, you can find something that you're looking for on the Michelin Guide, which I think is the most important guide to have hit New York since Zagat became popular, you know, 15 years ago.
It is all the buzz.
We'll be back and talk more about this in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:30. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Schott, and I'm here with Mark Pascal. Together we own Stage Left Restaurant and the brandy new just opened Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in downtown New Brunswick, New Jersey. And we are here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. Listen to us every day from 11 a.m. to 12 noon. And you can also reach us through our website at restaurantguysradio.com. And you can also receive our podcast on iTunes and Podcast Alley and all those cool podcasting sites.
Hey, Francis. You know, I'm very pleased to make an announcement today. About something that we've been working on, a program we've been working on for about 6 months now.
Mark and I are getting married.
Stop it. Stop it. A program we've been working on for about 6 months now, you knucklehead.
People do wonder out there in Radio Land. You know that, right? They're like,
I'm
my
married.
Partner, Francis, shut to a woman.
Yeah,
okay,
I'm married.
All right, go ahead.
And anyway, so a program we've been working on for about 6 months now to try and put all the details together. Francis and I talk about a lot about what we can do that we're destroying the planet and that we're not doing things sustainably, and how petroleum use is overused in this country, and what are the things that we can do to combat that. Well, there is a great couple of programs out there. And they're being heavily subsidized right now that we wanted to make you aware of, because we're going to be taking advantage of it this winter, and that is solar energy.
We're going solar. We're going solar with both the restaurants, and the way that the laws have changed and the regulatory environment has changed, it's sort of been slow going. But now if you put a solar array, photovoltaic cells, on your roof, people have talked about going solar for a long time, and it was basically a cool way to get hot water or heat your swimming pool. But now, if you put an array of photovoltaic cells, especially if you have a flat roof building, but even if you have a sloped roof, they have photovoltaic cells that look just like roofing shingles.
Mm-hmm.
The power that you generate, and here was the problem for so many years. The problem with solar power was you could generate power when it was sunny outside, but in order to be able to store that power to use it at night,
right,
when you needed it.
You needed such a big generator.
You needed such a big battery.
Battery, that's what I meant.
And the battery, of course, are full of toxic substances and dangerous and all that sort of stuff. The way the regulatory environment has changed is basically the utility companies need now to buy back from you power when you generate power. So
that was the big change in the law that brought this really to the fore.
And so it's made solar power useful, because the way it works is basically your electric meter runs backward when you're producing more power than you're using.
Mm-hmm.
And what that means is basically it allows you to use the electric company as your battery to store your power. So you put money, you put power into the grid, and when you put
the power grid,
when you put power into the electric into the power grid, you're doing it at peak times when the sun is shining and everyone's air conditioner is on. And then at night, when you're not generating power, then you use power from the electric company. You're basically using the electric company as a battery, and it works very, very well. If you have, depending on your building and where you're located and your exposure to the sun, you can generate, sometimes you can be a net producer of green energy.
Yes.
And at the very least, you can reduce your total energy consumption and turn what you do produce from fossil fuel dirty energy to green energy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's remarkably affordable.
And I don't want this to sound like a commercial, and the folks who are doing this for us are actually going to become advertisers later on in the show. But we signed our deal with them long before that deal ever came about. I want to talk to you a little bit about the numbers involved here, because I think people are intimidated, because we see a number for Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi of $65,000 is the top line number of what this project would cost. And, you know, immediately I see a number like that and I say, well, I would love to be involved in a program, but I just can't do it. But one of the things that we want to tell everybody in New Jersey, at least, and then there podcasters, people who are listening around the country, your state probably has some kind of similar program. Right now, New Jersey will pay you 2/3 of that money, and actually they'll pay it directly to whoever is doing the install for you. 2/3 of the money. So
that's not a loan.
That's not a loan. That's a grant. They pay it for you. So of the $65,000, $42,000 of that is paid by New Jersey. So now it's a $22,000 system. Still sounds very expensive, and I was still intimidated by that number, frankly. But when you look at what the benefits are, what you get back, and let's talk first about what the benefits are to the environment. You're using sustainable power that does not, it takes nothing away
right.
from,
there's no
from
pollution.
The planet.
Zero
no pollution whatsoever. So what you do is you get, from that power, you get, let's say, about $1,200 a year based on today's prices of energy.
And if prices go up, you would get more.
Well, each state has a requirement from the federal government to create a certain amount of this power, of this green power. So they have these things called green tag incentives, okay? And the green tags in New Jersey, the program is funded through 2020. That's another additional $1,500. You're close to $3,000 a year in what you're getting back from your from this system. So if you paid $22,000 for your system and you're getting $3,000 back, well, you're almost better off borrowing that money.
Right.
And
or you can borrow the $22,000.
You can borrow the $22,000 and pay it back. And by year five or six, your system's paid off. And now your system, which is guaranteed for 25 years, will continue to bring you dollars. There's also, starting January 1st of 2006, a new program where the federal government will add 8% to that.
Hey, listen, and this sounds a lot like an infomercial, but frankly, this is unpaid, okay? And
right.
and these guys are going to become advertisers on the show because it makes perfect sense because we want to talk really well of them later on. But as of now, they're not. And this is a program. The reason we're getting into the finances of this here, the reason we're talking so specifically about this here is we're running two restaurants off of this photovoltaic array.
Right.
Okay, that will be installed. It's being installed right now. And frankly, we didn't want to talk about it until now because we wanted to see if it would actually work out. We wanted to see if the numbers would actually work out.
Right.
And out there, for many of you businesses, especially if you have, and even for your home, if you are sun shining on your building or sun shining on your property somewhere, we're amazed by this. And Mark and I looked at this as a way to put our money where our mouth is.
Yep.
And it's amazing that I'm going to buy a $60,000 thing. The government's going to pay $40,000 of it. And of the 20 that I lay out, I'm going to get it back in a couple of years. And look, we talk all the time about sustainable agriculture. We talk all the time about making ourselves less dependent on practices that deplete the planet's resources and pollute the planet. Well, this is a way to do it, and we are always, listen, Mark and I are businessmen. We're restaurateurs. We work our butts off to run two restaurants.
Sure.
And the farmers that we work with are trying to run businesses. We're trying to keep the family farmer on the farm, not with a subsidy, but by buying their products. And this is, Mark and I say all the time, good ecology and good economy are one and the same. Good economic policy is to have a good ecological policy long term. And here is a way, which is very unusual, that even in the short term, this makes sense. It's another way, like eating well helps you to do good by doing well. This also, you can do good and do well at the same time. It makes a heck of a lot of sense. And if you want more information on this, and again, this isn't an ad, although it's going to be in a couple of weeks, you could go to our website. And we're going to put a company called E2Ecto, which is going to be the advertiser that's going to come on who installed our unit. But there are lots of other companies that do it.
And all of the benefits that I'm telling you, any of the solar panel installers can get you. So it doesn't matter who you use. And the person who's going to be advertising on the show, that's great. And more power to them.
And they're doing a fine job and all.
But what I'm telling you is, whether you're in New Jersey, whether you're someplace else, whether you use the company that we're using or use another company, this right now makes sense. And what's going on is the government's talking about cutting back the rebates on these programs. So this is something you want to act on.
The climate is ripe right now, and why we're spending 10 minutes on our radio show talking about this, which is a real departure for us, is that the climate is ripe right now for you to do, for many people to be able to do this, for nothing, for no money.
Right.
And frankly, it's too good to be true for very long. And we wouldn't have believed it ourselves, except that we've done it. And we've signed all the papers, and we're going forward. It's a great way to put your money where your mouth is, and it's a little complex filling out all the paperwork. And if you want information on it, you can email me. Just send it to me, francis@restaurantguysradio.com, and just put solar energy in the subject line. And if you're from out of state, I'll send you to somebody who can help you get more information on this stuff.
It's such a great thing. Francis and I investigated this, thinking it was going to cost us a fair amount of money out of pocket.
Which we would have spent, and it wound up
the fact that it's not. It's just amazing.
Amazing. Anyway, you're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:45. Hi, this is Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants and also of The Restaurant Guys radio show.
You know, one of the best things about the restaurant business is the creative side of it. Coming up with big ideas and then turning those concepts into reality is awesome. It's what I love most about what I do. But it can't stop there. If you can't communicate exactly what it is you're doing, then you'll find yourself standing alone in your dining room, just you and your big ideas. The Mardini Group can help you get your ideas across to others. The Mardini Group is a boutique graphic design firm, and they do extraordinary work. We use them, and as you know, we only use the best. Whether it's menu design, product packaging, a corporate report, promo material, a homepage, or an awesome logo for a brand new project like Catherine Lombardi, we turn to the Mardini Group. Some small business owners don't realize how important it is to have a strong visual identity. Without it, you come across as less than professional. That can cost you trust, and that lowers your bottom line. First impressions count for a lot, and that's why you need the Mardini Group. Go to RestaurantGuysRadio.com and click on the Mardini Group link, or call them at 718-694-9944. The Mardini Group for graphic design, 718-694-9944.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Mark Pascal and Francis Schott.
You forgot my name.
No, I didn't. I just
forgot my name.
I wanted to. I wish that I forgot your name. Sadly, you're the guy next to me almost every day in the radio station. And then, oh, look at that. You're the guy next to me again in the office.
All right, then. What are we talking about this hour? We are talking about food allergies, mm-hmm. which is an interesting topic that came up last night because we had someone in the restaurant, and this is really weird because usually people who have severe food allergies, like nut allergies and shellfish allergies, they're very cognizant of what's going on there.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a situation in the restaurant where someone ordered food, and just as it was about to hit their table, her husband said, wait
hey,
a second, honey.
You can't eat that. That's...
The waiter had clearly explained in the specials that there was a clam aspect to the dish,
mm-hmm.
and I guess the woman hadn't paid attention, really, I mean, and ordered it. And then when her husband saw it come out with a clam in it, he almost tackled the waiter.
It did a little panic attack.
But food allergies in restaurants are serious business.
Very, very serious, and we take them very seriously. And what Francis neglected to mention was the person was the wife of a very important political figure in the state of New Jersey. So it could have been really ugly
headlines,
ugly press for us.
I don't want to make the headlines that way. But the idea of food allergies in if you own a restaurant, you really need to take them very seriously because you know what, the possibility of you killing someone is very small, but it's there, you know, making someone very seriously ill.
If you have any kind of allergy at all, and one of the things that we ask people to make very clear is this something you don't like, or is this something you're allergic to?
Right.
Because something you're allergic to, we send up the flag, and that goes to every single person in the kitchen we talk about, every single ingredient in the dish. There's no... room for error once you tell us that you have a food allergy to something.
And I don't think, and I've worked in restaurants where they don't take it as seriously as all that, but if someone has an allergy, in particular a nut allergy, and some allergies are more difficult to deal with, and people who have them I feel bad for, but we work very, very hard to deal with people who have egg allergies or gluten allergies. But if you have a nut allergy or a shellfish allergy, the way to deal with that as a restaurateur is simply, and when someone says you have an allergy, what we do is the waiter tells the captain and all the bussers.
Mm-hmm.
It also goes back into the kitchen, the hot side, the cold side. It gets marked on every dupe, nut allergy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think it's incumbent upon us to do that because you never know. And you know what? Am I saying that we've never made a mistake, that nothing's ever gotten through in the 20 years we've been doing this?
Mm-hmm.
I can't say that for sure, but
right.
I can say we do our darndest.
Yeah, we're trying very hard. But you've got to, as the customer, you've got to make it abundantly clear. And frankly, when you make your reservation, a little note of, I have a nut allergy. Then again, when you arrive in the dining room, a mention to your waiter, I have a nut allergy. You want to be repeating that like you're in the emergency room and somebody's about to give you penicillin and you're allergic to it. You want to be telling people constantly the things you're allergic to and the things that you need to avoid.
And also, if you are out there and you have dietary restrictions of any sort, whether it be an allergy or a health concern, or you're a vegetarian or you keep kosher or any of those things, when you go to a restaurant, especially if it's a nice restaurant, if you're going well in advance and you're going to an expensive restaurant, you know, people think, oh, well, I don't want to be a pain and tell them about this on the phone in advance. it is really no skin off my nose to a week in advance, a day in advance, know that you're coming in, look over things, and maybe even come up with some alternative solutions for you. And maybe the nuts are added to the sauce at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and I can say, you know what, hold some of that sauce aside for when this person comes in tonight with a walnut allergy. And it is fairly easy for me to give you as many options as I can if I have a little bit of notice. 7:15 on a Saturday night, we're firing on all cylinders, and I can't stop the chef from turning out 400 dinners and say, oh, by the way, let's think about the sauce. What can we do except for nuts? And, you know, we have a lot of clients who are vegetarians, and we always have vegetarian selections on the menu. But when we have someone who's coming in specifically to say, listen, I've been there, and I'm bringing my girlfriend, my daughter, my niece, my son, who's a vegetarian, what can you do?
You give us some time to think about it. You give us some time to allow our creativity to come to the fore, rather than you want to see how we react in kind of an emergency situation. Francis and I had somebody call us just a few days ago and say they were allergic to latex, which is something that we hadn't been confronted with before. And they unfortunately called us about 20 minutes before they wanted to come into dinner. And there was just nothing we could do. Some of our prep cooks are using latex gloves when they're handling some of the product.
And frankly, I don't know what's been touched by latex gloves.
And that's
it.
For us to know 100% for sure, we would have had to have some notice and prepared a specific meal for that specific person. And so we recommended that person not come into dinner. Believe me, I don't like to recommend that people don't
please,
come into dinner.
Please don't give me $100, as always said. Well, but the other thing that chefs, and I know that a lot of restaurateurs and restaurant professionals listen to this show, when you get someone who says they have an allergy, and look, are there some patrons who just don't like something and say they're allergic when they're not? We know that happens. But when someone says they have an allergy, you need to take them at their word, and you need to be very vigilant. And to all you kitchen professionals out there, no secret ingredients, okay?
Right.
No secret ingredients from your staff. Doesn't mean you need to give the recipe out of everything you have, but if you're using a shellfish stock to give that added oomph to your fish dish,
you might get some oomph that you're not looking
you
for.
You might get some oomph in an ambulance. Mm-hmm. And no secret ingredients. And I can't tell you that very often that's what happens when things go awry, is the wait staff doesn't know. And if you're a kitchen professional and you're a chef or you're a cook and you slightly change a dish and the wait staff, you've gone over with the wait staff what's in it, and then you add nuts, ground up nuts to it as your secret ingredient, you must communicate it. And as a wait staff, when someone tells you they're allergic, you go back to the kitchen just in case we had a slight change in recipe you think you may know, but check it with everybody, because that's a mistake you don't want to make.
You got to double and triple check.
You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:55. Hey, you're back with The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis. Well, I want to talk with you, with the holidays coming up, about an urban myth.
We've talked about a lot of different things today, huh? Solar energy, allergies, Michelin guide. We're all over the place. We had a lot of stuff we wanted to talk about for just a little bit of time.
I had M&M's for breakfast. There is an urban myth. Have you heard the urban myth that there actually only exist 100 fruitcakes in the world? Have you heard that? And we just give the fruitcake from one person to another?
I can't stand fruitcake.
I don't understand. I got to tell you, I'm a restaurant professional, and I'm an eater. I can't understand why anyone would eat a fruitcake.
You know what's worse than eating a fruitcake?
What?
Giving one to somebody else. It's just wrong.
Or how do you feel about re-gifting fruitcakes? Listen, in the Wall Street Journal, four fruitcake manufacturers recently petitioned the Food and Drug Administration to cut the serving size of fruitcake by 2/3. Now, they can't cut exactly how much you eat, but what that does is it all their nutritional information is based on the serving size, right? Now a serving size in that category, which is a heavy cake, is 4.4 ounces, right? 4 ounces, that's about the right, you know, if you slice yourself a piece of fruitcake, it weighs like 30 pounds, right?
Yes.
And that packs over 400 calories. The fruitcake manufacturers want the FDA to have the fruitcake size, the serving size, be cut to 1.5 ounces.
So like a thumbnail worth of fruitcake. Here you
go.
Yeah,
and they're like, the fruitcake manufacturers say that 4 ounces is overindulgent and unhealthy. Yes, gentlemen, it is. Bob McNutt. No jokes, please. President of Collins Street Baker in Corsicana, Texas, says, our fruitcake is like a fine wine. You take a taste, and it kind of leaves you with this long, nice finish.
And his buddy, Al Dried Fruit.
Oh, my
said,
God.
Francis, can I just tell you something?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know how many calories are in a portion of fruitcake for me?
How many?
Zero.
Right, because
I'm not touching this stuff.
Yeah, I think that they want it to be... come on! Nobody eats 1 ounce of fruitcake. I mean, either you don't eat it at all, or you have about 4 ounces.
Right.
And I recommend you don't eat it at all.
I'm on the don't eat it
at all. And this is just another example of businesses trying to get one over.
Trying to get one over. So when you look at the package, say, oh, look, only 80 calories.
And so what I would like to say to these fruitcake manufacturers, as a result of this petition, we're saying on the air that fruitcake is not only bad, it's bad for you. That's right, 400 calories. If you're brave enough to eat it, I say it's not worth it.
No way.
The choice is up to you, but don't send me any for the holidays. Anyway, you're listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 12 noon.